And welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the second half of American Exposé. I'm Sam, sitting in here, and some of you may know Sam and Trish. You hear us out and about everywhere. We're always showing up God knows where. Some may say, like a bad penny, we're always turning up, and that's a good thing, because when we're out here standing up against evil and standing up for righteousness, that's what we should be. We should be always like bad pennies turning up somewhere. At least in the eyes of the evildoers, anyhow. First of all, I want to mention Chris's website. Please go visit AmericanExpose.com. That's AmericanExpose.com, American spelled with a K and not a C. And you can go in there and learn all you want about Agenda 21, and there's just tons of information. That site has just turned into a giant behemoth of information, and it's a wonderful resource. Use it while it's there. You'll learn a lot of good information there. And also, please remember to support the network. The network needs your help. It's very expensive to run a network, so please help RBN. And you can call them, certainly, or you can do it via PayPal. There's several ways of doing it. And please support the network. The network needs your help. And we continue the interview with Jim Beers. Jim, are you with us?
I sure am.
Jim, it's been a while also since we've talked. I've had you on our broadcast a couple of times, the Information Corner, which is the broadcast we do, and it's a pleasure hearing you out there once again putting forth your information. There's nobody like somebody who's worked within the various government programs that has come out and is getting the information out there. You know, a lot of it that we all knew, and you pretty much confirm everything that all of us know. And, of course, the documentation is all out there for anybody to see if they will get their heads out of the sand. So I sure do appreciate you being out there and appreciate all the work that you're doing.
Well, thanks. I often think that, and I tell people this when I give a talk, that it's not so much that I have answers to things or I know things that you don't know, but that sometimes the way I look at things, the way the government's doing stuff, and the way I see things coming down, it helps people like yourself and others who are trying to figure out what to do and how to react in an effective way. It just helps you to be a little more effective. And if I do that, I'm very happy that I'm doing as much as I can.
Absolutely. Well, and that's all any of us can do. And see, the thing is, this is all part of what it's all about. We all have to work together. And I know I'm certainly working on a local basis within my community. And I'll tell you, we still have a long way to go, and I'll comment on some of that after the break. We're going to be coming up into a break. But I had an interesting experience at the county fair last night in our local region, and I'm amazed at some of the stuff that people are buying into that just don't know, and yet the everything is right out there in front of their face that they would just stop and take a look. You know, now we've had some good successes here where we live South Central Missouri, but we still have a long way to go because there's far too many people that are comfortable. And I think the thing I'm starting to get concerned about is it may come down to the point where more oxes need to be gored before people will really start to wake up in mass. And by then, I'm hoping that it's not going to be too late.
Well, you know, there's a big difference between the way things that you and I are concerned about are going and the way, for instance, our discontent with the British, say, in the 1770 was. In other words, everybody was mad about the way they were getting taxed. Everybody was mad about having to put troops in their house. But now we've got the loggers out in Oregon are getting shafted, but, you know, I don't live in Oregon. Or the ranchers up in Montana are getting all eaten out by wolves, but, you know, I don't raise cattle. And the hunters over in Minnesota or over in Arkansas aren't going to be able to hunt ducks anymore because they got ivory-billed woodpeckers. But, you know, I don't hunt. I don't hunt in Arkansas.
Absolutely.
But, you know, they pick us off one at a time.
You got it, Jim. Well, hold that thought through the break here. We'll be right back. You are listening to American Exposé. I'm Sam, sitting in for Chris. We'll be right back. We're back, ladies and gentlemen, with more of American Exposé, and I just want to share this quick story with you. Trish and I had a chance last night to go to our county fair, Some friends of ours invited us, and we went ahead and went. And one of the people that we ran into at this fair was a substitute teacher that taught in the public schools around here. As you know, in a small town, they usually have one main public school. They have a high school, and then they have a grade school, or what they now call middle school. And so anyway, I was talking to this gal, small talk, and just kind of filling her in a little bit on the stuff that I knew. And the subject came around to President Bush's Health Freedom Initiative, as he calls it. And I was alerting this gal, I said, about our concerned citizens meeting that we have here. And I mentioned about the thing going that we were going to discuss was President Bush's Health Freedom Initiative and this whole issue of forced mental screening on children with or without parental consent. And it got so quiet you could have heard a pin drop. This gal either knows what's going on or just didn't know what to say, one of the two, and I have the feeling it's the latter, because you can always tell when you strike a nerve. Folks, there are more people running around in our communities that know what's going on and refuse to say anything, and in my personal opinion, that makes them accomplices to the crime, because, folks, once they start doing this, there's going to be any excuse used to dope your kids up and everything else, and it's just going to be a disaster. And we're trying to do what we can within our local area to get the information out so that parents will know what's going on. And, Jim, are you back with us?
You bet. I'm here.
All right. Absolutely. We have John from Florida. John, come on up here and talk to us.
Okay. Hello, Sam. Hello, Jim.
Hey, good to talk to you.
Hey, I've got something that's been kind of like itching in my brain for about 11 years now. And maybe Jim's the man that can help me get an answer. Back in my younger days, in the summer of 1963, I turned 18 and wound up in around Fort Bragg, North Carolina. Got to know the area back then. And I've been back in and out over the years. And somewhere around 1994, as I was up in the area traveling north on Route 95, headed up to Long Island, I saw a sign on the side of the interstate that said, entering a global trans park zone. And I, at other times, saw the same sign on roads headed west towards Charlotte, towards Raleigh. It seems to be quite an extensive area that these signs were posted on. And I have put this question in the past decade to a lot of talk show hosts, and nobody seems to know anything about it. And I'm just wondering if it may tie in to this, you know, agenda that Jim's talking about. Has he any familiarity with global trans park zones, which sounds like an oxymoron?
Go ahead, Jim.
You bet. Actually since the late 60s, when the Endangered Species Act and the UN CITES Convention was being signed, and the Endangered Species Act passed, the Wilderness Act passed, the Animal Welfare Act was passed. In the midst of all that, in the late 60s, there was all of this increased activity by UN bureaucracies about land use and environmental management. And along with all of the hoopla we've been talking about endangered species this and wilderness that and everything, there was this big push internationally at UN meetings to identify wetlands of international importance and international ecosystems that are being threatened. You know, the stuff about the Amazons disappearing and all of that. They talk about that stuff and Yellowstone and whatever. And what they did was they asked the United States and other nations, African nations, to submit areas that can be designated as internationally important areas to maintain the global ecosystem. It's all BS. But anyway, one of those things was the national parks in the United States aspect of this. See, wetlands would come under the Fish and Wildlife Service, and so the Fish and Wildlife Service offered up some big wetlands in the United States to be designated as international wetlands, and international ecosystems really came under the Forest Service and the Bureau of Land Management and some big federal lands out west that they could say, like Yellowstone and that there. But then there was the national parks, the parks in Europe and the parks in the United States. In order to corral them into the UN for the whole business and have the UN help them build their budgets within their countries and their power and authority, like the Endangered Species Act, National Park Service and the UN bureaucrats came up with this global park zone areas. And what they did was then they said, well, in the United States, we've got these southern pine forests. They're a very important ecosystem with da-da-da-da-da. So we'll put some of those. And up in here up in New England, we've got the New England boreal zone forest transition areas where the grasslands of the south occasionally meet up with these boreal trees, and that's an important area. And then out west, we've got the high grassland, so they'll put in something like the Black Hills. And so what you went through down there in Fort Bragg is one of these UN-designated areas. And what it does is it allows the Park Service to go into Congress every year and say, you know, we've only got 10,846 acres in the federal government owns within this global transnational park zone or whatever they're calling it down there, and it's designated for the UN, and we really have identified critically endangered habitat over here, some of this bottomland hardwood and some of this coastal Piedmont grassy plain. You know, they'll come up with all this transition stuff, and some congressman from down there or some senator will say, oh, I'll sponsor you for more money for that. They'll get more money put in the budget for the Park Service to buy a new unit in there, see? And then you'll get a little mailing at home from old Senator Claghorn and Congresswoman Jones or whatever that they sponsored new legislation to get more parkland in your area as part of this global park zone thing. So you'll be able to, you get the impression you're going to be able to go visit someplace when Aunt Edna visits you from the Great Lakes or something. And everybody's happy. So you vote for them, and more money is paid out. Not only to buy the stuff, but then you got to put a new superintendent over there, and he's got to have some maintenance people, and he's got to have a maintenance shed, and then they want to close down the roads that go through it, like they're doing in the park right next to where I live here in Virginia, closing down state roads that went through a national battlefield over here. Those roads were there before there's even a battlefield out there, but they're going to close them down. So that's the way it goes, and it's just more and more money, more and more people, and more land taken out of private property,
right.
More and more control on the people in the area. I mean, since they started this stuff is when they came up with this nonsense about view sheds. Well, this is a national park here, and why Mr. Beers over there that owns that stand of timber wants to cut it down. And
yeah, Jim.
You can see it from here. Yeah.
Jim, you know, as I think about what you're saying, sort of like in the center, in the bullseye of this radius where I saw these signs posted, is the Uwharrie National Forest in North Carolina. You know, it was a pretty big chunk of land, and I know used to go out there and train with special forces, and it's used by the military, even though Fort Bragg is not really part of it. But Camp McCall is nearby there and such. And so, you know, what you're basically saying is I saw all a part of the UN agenda. This is just gobbling up private land all around that
And guess who else is using
park.
This?
Yeah.
Think about the people that don't want any hunting going on, that want to close down more land from use, the same people that are trying to close down Camp Pendleton out in California from any military activity because you've got an endangered louse wort over here and you got an endangered mouse over there. They're the same ones that go over to the meetings over in Switzerland with the UN bureaucrats and say that they need this designated area that they should talk to the Americans about over here by Fort Bragg. Because, among other things, not only will it cause the Park Service to grow, the Park Service will support it, these people who want to shut down the use of this land from Greenpeace and PETA, the Animal Welfare Institute, the Nature Conservancy, and these other people that don't want to see not only logging and ranching, they don't want to see military activity.
Uh-huh.
So when you talk about Fort Bragg, that's just another thing that's mentioned in the meetings in Washington, D.C. by these non-government organizations and the things that they tell the U.N. bureaucrats, that the U.N. bureaucrats and the Europeans love the idea that the United States has got less and less places that can do military training or test weapons or whatever.
Yeah. What a way to take a land over without ever firing a shot. You come in under the guise of environmentalism and you can have a nice foreign takeover and you have enough willing sellouts and dupes here in the United States that are willing to give it to them.
Yeah. Amen, brother.
Okay, well, thanks, Jim. You kind of confirm what my suspicions have been for so long.
Well, I hope so. I hope I helped.
Yep.
out here.
All right, 1-800-313-9443, 1-800-313-9443. Anybody want to call in and ask Jim a question? Vicki in Idaho is here, so let's go ahead and bring Vicki on in. Vicki, come on in and join us.
Hi. In the last hour, a man, well, I called yesterday, and I gave some information about a bill that Senator Lugar had put through.
Right, Roger had called in, right.
Yeah, well, I put the information on that out on my website, and I just wanted to give it to you in case anybody wants to go look at it.
Please do. Go right ahead.
Okay. It's www.eagleforumofidaho.org.
Okay.
And it's a new website, so there's not much out there, but if you just click on United Nations, it'll take you to a page, and you'll see Senator Lugar's name. And if you click on that, then it will show you every, you know, the steps that I went through to find that legislation. And,
absolutely. You want to hold through the break, Vicki?
Sure.
Okay, let's hold through the break. Let's take this break. We'll be right back. Jim, stay with us. You're listening to an American Exposé, if I can talk here. Anyway, I'm Sam, and we'll be back just right after these messages. Stay tuned. Okay, we're back with American Exposé. Sam sitting in here for Chris Gerner, and we have Jim Beers with us. He's our guest. He used to work with the Fish and Wildlife Service and is coming out exposing what was going on in that agency and various other things in our government dealing with some of our nonsensical wildlife policies, that is. And we have Vicki from Idaho. Vicki, go ahead and give your website information again so people can log in there.
Okay, it's www.eagleforumofidaho.org.
Okay.
And what I'm doing, since I just recently found out about this Agenda 21, I'm trying to build my website in such a way so that people can see that it really is real. And they're really doing this. And the, George Bush's, or George Bush 41, I should say, his 1,000 points of light, those are all the NGOs.
Oh, they absolutely are. And I think somebody needs to try to alert Phyllis Schlafly, who's the head of that organization, of this stuff that's going on, because I've never heard her comment on it yet. And there's so much more. There's so much of a bigger picture that apparently she doesn't know or hasn't been informed about or something, because you know, Eagle Forum is a very powerful organization when they get themselves behind something.
Uh-huh. Well, of course, you know, we're just the Idaho chapter, and I don't know what her position is. I mean, I might be out of bounds in even saying this, but if I am, then I'll just put it on a different website.
Yeah, well.
Because people need to know about this. I mean, this is basically a communist takeover of our country.
Oh, sure it is.
We're all being herded in a direction into planned communities by these central planners who, you know, think they have the whole damn world figured out.
Oh, that's exactly right. And see, this is the thing. Now, you know, I wouldn't think they could say anything to you as an individual chapter, but I think it might be up to you as an individual chapter or various chapters out there to let them know what's going on, because, see, she was a little slow to come to the table on illegal immigration until somebody got a hold of her and showed her that this was really happening, and she started running with it. And that's how sometimes you can bring them to the table, and we need more people in this fight on a lot of these issues. And it's multifaceted, as you know. They're coming at us hand over fist with everything you can think of, and people are becoming overwhelmed. And I keep telling people, you have to pick a battle and take your position and fight that battle. I know none of us can fight all the battles all the time, but if each and every one of us took an issue, mine is land rights here in South Central Missouri, because I'm in a farming community, so I know what these guys, I'm not a farmer myself, but I know where my food comes from. So I'm in this fight primarily on the issue of land rights, but we are taking on a few other things that we can handle too. Some
well,
others
they're infiltrating
might...
our schools too. There are and Jane Musco, the president of our chapter, the Idaho chapter of Eagle Forum, knows a lot about how the UN is infiltrating our schools.
Yeah.
Apparently, we have 160 globe schools. They're called globe schools, and what they are UN schools that are teaching our kids to be little communists, you know, global citizens.
Oh, absolutely. It's a multifaceted thing, and we need more people out there like Jim, who we have here. We need more people becoming educated by people like Jim who have actually worked on the inside, and this is why I value people like him and Charlotte Iserby, who used to work in the Department of Education under Ronald Reagan. She knows what's going on in that agency. We were being infiltrated a long time ago, longer than most people know, you know. So,
yeah.
Well, Vicki, thank you so much for your call.
Okay, well, thank you.
God bless. Mm-hmm. All right, 1-800-313-9443. Jim, you have any comments on anything Vicki was saying there?
No, not really. I was glad to hear what she's doing out there. And then I know the people in Idaho are busy with a lot of this stuff because they're on the front lines out west of a lot of these matters because the federal government owns so much of the state. So they're used to bullying the state agencies around, and the state agencies are more used to following them, except for some places like Wyoming where they're standing up to them. But
yeah.
Between the Forest Service, the BLM, the Fish and Wildlife Service, the Park Service, and it's very difficult for those people out there, and they're kind of on the front line of a lot of these environmental and animal crazy things that are going on.
Well, see, and that's one of the things, Jim, that I've always said, and that is there are more of us than there are of these people out here pushing these agendas, and we need to act like there's more of us than there are of them. And that's part of the problem. We have so many people out there, as long as they can still buy their six-pack of beer and sit there in front of the TV and watch their sports games or something like that. I always knew there was a reason why in every major market that I've lived in prior to moving out here in the rural areas, I always knew there was a reason why there were so many sports TV and radio stations and so much pablum for people to be engrossed in, because if you can keep everybody immersed in the pablum, why, they won't know what's going on. And meanwhile, the powers that be can gradually worm their way into their lives, and by the time they realize that everything's been taken, they don't even know what hit them.
Well, that's true. And like I was saying earlier, it's not like you've got an oppressive government that's taking away everybody's guns tomorrow or taxing everybody much higher tomorrow or telling everybody they don't have any property tomorrow, so everybody kind of rises up about it. They just, you know, they whack on the loggers up in Oregon for a while, then they get the ranchers down in Colorado, and then they get the trappers over in New Jersey, and nobody stands together because they don't all understand that they're all being affected by the same thing.
You got it. We're at the bottom of the hour break. Stay tuned. You're listening to American Exposé. I'm Sam, sitting in here for Chris. We'll be right back. Remember to support the network. We need to keep that out there. And you can go online. There's certainly links there to do that. And folks, it's not cheap to run a network. It's very expensive. I know what it's like even just to do my show around here, and I'm not even tied directly to a network. So I can only imagine what it's like when you pay the satellite feed costs and everything else. And it is very expensive. So please help the network. TJ from Minnesota, come on in here and talk to us.
Yes, sir, gentlemen. I want to thank you, Mr. Beers, for your appearance here today. I'm sure Chris Gerner appreciates this, too. And the public is very respectful of your former position and your efforts right now, that's for certain. I want your feeling, your take, your gut feeling on the fact that these mountain lions are showing up in Minnesota, Iowa, New York, Pennsylvania. Even if they're escaped cats, a lot more people would be having kitty cat cougars in their backyard, and I haven't seen that, but we do know that mountain lions are showing up where they haven't been possibly ever. What's your take on that? Are these planted, or what's the deal?
No, I'm pretty well convinced for quite a long time here, and I mean for the last 15 years, that what we're seeing is that with whether we're talking about southeastern Canada, like Ontario on over, or we're talking about the western United States and down into the southwest, where cougars have occurred in recent years, we've seen an increase in the difficulty in hunting them, more and more restrictions. You can't use dogs here. You can't bait them over there. You can't use traps anymore on public lands in another state. More and more restrictions on their take. And even in California, where in the early 1980s we saw a law passed by a ballot initiative that there could not be any hunting or management of cougars in the state, period. And since that time, there's been numerous people killed, many attacked, and these cougars have increased to such a degree that they're the main reason that the California bighorn sheep is endangered.
Yeah.
Now, when that goes on, whether we're talking about coyotes or bears or cougars or even wolves, when you've got a lot of them in an area and they're not being bothered by hunting or whatever, then there's a lot of pressure to spread out more. What you wind up with here in Virginia, every year we have one or two bears pop up in the suburbs of Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
Invariably, they're young male bears that are pushed out in the mountains about 80 miles to the west by female bears when they're a year old, because the females don't want them around anymore, and the big older male bears will kill them or try to fight them or something if they see them. So these bears get out and they wander a distance. That's how traditionally they populate or repopulate areas that they've been out of. And I think that what you're seeing in the Midwest, just like we see here in the Northeast, up in New England and up in the Adirondacks, up in New York, is you see these cougars spreading out and going long distances. And think about this, too. We no longer have a lot of people that stay out in the woods very much anymore. And cougars are a pretty secretive animal. They can be living close to you. And until they start killing your dog or they start making a lot of noise at night if they hang around or they start killing your sock, 9 times out of 10 you don't see them. And even when you do, I'll bet you've had people say, well, I saw a cougar over such and such. And everybody says, oh, I don't believe that. The sheriff doesn't want to be bothered with that kind of stuff. So him and his deputies will say, oh, they've probably been drinking beer or something. And
yeah,
the game and fish people don't want any responsibility for knowing about it, and then if it causes a problem, they might be held responsible. So they always say, oh, it must be an escaped one, or you just didn't identify it right. We can't find any trace of it. You got all of these things stacked up that nobody wants to admit the darn things are around. So until some kid is hurt at a bus stop, or somebody sees it feeding out there on two young sheep it's killed, or it wanders into town somewhere and gets hung up in a garage or between decks on a house or something, you don't hear anything about it. And it doesn't take too long for a female to also wander off into those areas, because who's hunting much anymore of predators, even in Minnesota? You know, you don't see guys out there calling in coyotes as much as you used to.
Right.
Or you don't see a lot of other kinds of hunting where people might see these things and maybe kill one once in a while.
Right.
So, you know, they've got pretty free access to move, except for when guys are out there during deer season. There aren't a whole lot of guys out there early in the morning, late in the evening, or walking on a rabbit call or something to see, you know, what's going on out there.
Okay,
you
well...
You get a lot of wandering. They can wander a long way in a short period if they set their mind to it.
Right. So your opinion, then, is there isn't any planting so that for UN purposes of some of these species. What about the wolves out west? That's a little different story, isn't it?
Yeah, they were open about planting them. Let me say this. I work for a state game and fish department. I work for the federal government. It would be very difficult, I mean really difficult, to load a mountain lion in a truck or something, and you couldn't sedate them because you were going to let them go.
Right.
And drive out somewhere north of Bemidji without somebody hearing the thing in the back of the truck or some guy saying to his wife, well, honey, you know, we just popped a mountain lion outside of Grand Rapids. I mean, that would be very difficult to pull off and not have it leak out somehow. You know what I mean? It would take more than just you and me to go get one and transport it and, you know, all of that stuff. So, no, I really don't think that there's anybody going around letting them go. Now, that said, I would not, and I mean not, put it past Animal Welfare Institute, the Humane Society of the United States, or PETA, to have a couple of their people get some guy's pet cougar or find a pet cougar somewhere, or even live trap one, say, and drive it to a place like Minnesota or Illinois to release it so that people could then claim, oh, we've got to stop the hunting in this area because this animal's repopulating and it's endangered here because there haven't been any in Illinois for the last 170 years and this is very important, so we've got to shut down farming over here and people have got to let the trees come back over there and the government ought to buy a big chunk of this bottom land so that they could repopulate. You know, I could see that. I could see that.
Yeah.
They could pull it off, at least initially. But whether or not that's going on, I have not really seen anything to lead me to believe that's the case.
Well, I can tell you, too, just on some information that I've been able to glean here lately, and that is the fact that these people care nothing about what they claim they care about because, Jim, about 2 years ago, there was a piece that ran on, I think it's AmericanLandRights.org, I think is where this piece ran, about 2 years ago, headline entitled, U.S. Forest Service tests cabin termination fire plan. Now, what this was all about was in reference to the fires they were having out west. And, of course, you know, when they don't allow the forest to be pruned and to be kept up, it just creates a huge amount of kindling for the fires to fuel on. And, of course, naturally, they hamper people's ability to save their homes out there. Well, right away, the first thing you think about, well, if this is really so much about saving wildlife, then what about the countless numbers of wildlife that are burned to a crisp every time these fires break out? And so basically what you see here is just a ploy by government to take control of people's land using wildlife as the excuse.
Well, you know, when they have these fires, too, in holdings, like say your dad or your grandpa had a cabin in there and you're still using it, when they get burned down, then you got a hard time getting a permit to get put back in.
Yeah.
And when they get burned down and nobody's using the road for a while to go back in and out of this burned out area, that's when you can close the road down.
You got
it. You can claim that it's like that because it's needed to restore the area and to try to control invasive species and blah, blah, blah. And you know, they got a line of malarkey as long as your arm about this stuff. But that's an excuse to not only consolidate inholdings, but to close roads and to shut down uses that are going on, like getting back into a certain lake to go fishing or something, and they really don't want people still going in there, or at the very least, make it more of a permit system, to get a permit system in place for a number of people and to be able to charge for it, which further makes it more and more difficult for people to use the resources. And the fewer people using the resources, the easier it is 5 years from now when you get a real green Congress or a real green administration in Washington to say, well, they ought to close down the Beers Lake unit there on the Nicolet National Forest. You know,
yeah.
Exactly. So, you know, you don't have a road back in there. The inholdings are gone. People don't go back into the lake much anymore. So, well, four or five guys don't get to go back in and fish. Big deal. You know, so nobody says anything.
Yeah.
Bingo. They get what they wanted all along.
Well, see, they do this gradually. It's like everything else they do, and if they do it gradually enough, most people won't say anything because, well, it's always the other guy. It's never
exactly.
In my backyard. TJ, do you have anything else?
No. Thank you very much, Jim, and keep up the good work.
Well, thanks, TJ. Good luck to you.
You too, Sam.
Hey, blessings to you. You betcha.
Okay.
1-800-313-9443. 1-800-393-1443. And, this deal with the cabin termination fire plan really shocked the daylights out of me on the one hand. I kind of suspected as much by watching how the fires were being handled out west. But it pretty much confirmed to me that certainly at minimum, the fires were being allowed purposely to get out of control to burn these people out. Or in some cases, I wouldn't put it past somebody who, if they were crooked enough, to even help start one of them to get this whole thing going. And, you know, I don't put anything, I'm just about at the point anymore, Jim, we don't have the caliber of people. I'm not saying there aren't good people in government trying to do the right thing, but I am just about of the adage anymore that if anybody from the federal government comes and tells me it's raining, I'm going to put my hand out once, and then I better put my hand outside again to make sure it isn't a bird.
Well, how much time do we have to the next break? How much time, you think?
How much time there? Let's see. 6 minutes to break.
Because I could start talking a little bit about that, but, you know, I can wait till after.
Okay, yeah, let's take Bob from Kansas. Let's pick Bob up here from Kansas, and then we'll come back after that. Bob, welcome to the broadcast.
How you doing?
Hey, glad to hear you. How are you? Good.
Well, I'm out right out by your woods there around where you live.
Yeah.
And so the cougar thing, around here we've had cougar sightings. You full well know it, too, around Kansas City. Now, I know a guy that runs a cat sanctuary down in Lewisburg, Kansas. He told me there wasn't a week go by one of these suburbanites didn't come out with a cat that had overgrown his usefulness. And not, he's not a cute little kitty anymore. He's an 80-pound meat eater.
Mm-hmm.
And he can't take them in. He's got a whole herd of scrap cattle just to feed his tigers and lions and such. He's got one breeding pair of mountain lions and a breeding pair of bobcats. And, you know, that's all he can keep is one and four or five tigers. That's all he can afford. And so it's kind of like a little zoo. You go in and you look at him and talk to him, and he teaches you about cats. Well, he can't afford them, so he turns them away. And I'm sure they're turning them loose out there. These people are. He says there isn't a week go by. Now, that's 52 cats a year come into his camp that he can't take care of.
You know, if that's the case, and I'm certainly not, I don't doubt it at all, then I'd have to reevaluate what I'm aware of. I'm not personally familiar with that many cats being held in captivity and individuals holding them. But if that's going on, then I think you're 100% right that there's probably a lot of that.
There's so many deer out here that they can proliferate rather well.
Oh, yeah.
And there's no problem with them breeding, and the climate's good for them. I'm telling you, we got a lot of them out here.
Well, you know, mountain lions, just like bears, just like wolves, just like coyotes, you know, they really don't need the deer and these other things. We all think of them as living out off Mother Nature and that. The truth of the matter is that if they wandered into an area, they learn to adapt. The fact that the pizza parlor place puts pizza dough out at night in the mall, and they'll come back in the back of the mall and look for garbage and go back out and learn ways to pick up, kill dogs or do a lot of things. They're very adaptable. The idea that they only do certain things and they always do this and they never do that is just not true.
But we're so full.
You know, they can get by.
We're so full of deer out here that they don't even have to worry about that right now. But you're right, they are adaptable, and cats, those cats aren't, they're not scared of people. That, they'll double back on you. They'll sit there and watch you walk right on by, and you won't even know they're there. And they'll double back on you. If you're following their trail, they'll come right back around, and they'll be standing behind you before you even realize what hit you. And if they want you, they got you. They're dangerous. We ought to be allowed to hunt them.
Well, I don't see why you're not. To be honest with you, states ought to have hunting seasons, mainly to keep certain numbers of animals in certain areas and to keep them out of other areas. And if you've got a place like, let's say, North Dakota. Say they've got bears in western North Dakota, and they want to keep a herd of maybe 300 or 400 in western North Dakota, but they don't want them east of the river. And they ought to just have an open hunting season year-round east of the river and have a restricted season so that they only take 75 a year or something west of the river. And we ought to be doing that in a lot of states. The idea that these animals somehow can go where they want and this is their habitat, I mean, it's getting more and more absurd every year about mountain lions that wander into Rapid City, South Dakota, or a bear up in New Jersey where police don't want to shoot them and they don't want to hurt them, and they wait until they can tranquilize them and hope that they don't get hurt falling out of the tree, and they bring in a truck and a crane to lift them, and all of this nonsense. I mean, you'd swear to God that this was some sort of a God to be worshipped here. These wild animals.
But bears aren't all that.
Into places.
Bears aren't all that dangerous. Generally, they'll just go away.
Yeah, they will. But you know, by the same token, they've got classes up in New Jersey where they've got lots of bears in northern New Jersey in a very densely populated area of humans, where they tell the kids not to put food in their backpacks. If they see a bear, they should throw the food and then run away from the bears, and where they keep the schools closed because bears are in the neighborhood.
Well, anyway, Hitler was a tree hugger type. He had a lot of environmental laws and took control of his land that way, too. So this is nothing new, is it?
No. You know, in fact, Hitler had a whole department that was prepared to say the way the rural countryside of Europe was supposed to be run and which pre-Roman plants and animals should be there. They wanted to go to pre-Roman plants and animals in a pre-Roman environment, just like these people today with the native ecosystems, and get rid of the invasive species and the endangered species.
You know what species I want to see endangered or even made extinct? I think we should do it as soon as possible.
What's that?
The ruling class. I'll see you later.
All right, talk to you later.
All right,
we got a break coming up, and we have Alan from Pennsylvania, I believe. Coming up here, stay tuned. You're listening to American Exposé. I'm Sam, sitting in for Chris. Stay tuned. With American Exposé, I'm Sam, sitting in for Chris Gerner this hour, who will be back on Monday. And we have Jim Beers with us he originally worked for the Fish and Wildlife Service and is coming out exposing a lot of these environmental policies that are going on. And we have Alan from Pennsylvania. Come on in and kind of quickly, because we got to wrap up the show here. We're getting down to the end.
Yeah, I'll make it quick as possible. 50 or 51 years ago, in the Weekly Reader, that the school children are supposed to read, there was an article in, I'm pretty sure it was in March of 55. It was in the early part of the year. There was an article on the ivory-billed woodpecker and how extinct it was and what they had to do. I don't remember a whole lot about the article, but I do know the ivory-billed woodpecker was featured in one of those articles, so somebody on the Internet could probably search that out. I don't have the capability.
That is correct. Now, the last sighting that was verified was in about 1944, and there was a lot of inquiry and a lot of little expeditions for it down in Louisiana and East Texas, and southern Arkansas and Mississippi, looking for the bird. And in the middle 50s is when it pretty well started to then peter out, and they pretty well said, well, yeah, it looks like it's extinct. We've looked everywhere, and we can't hear them. And they make a distinct rat-a-tap-tap on the trees.
Yeah,
the
call
of the bird is very, very different than anything else.
I believe that was a precursor of what they're going to do now. See, it seems to be in a 50-year cycle that these Luciferians do these things.
Well, you know, that could be, but I'll tell you, the idea that people can believe today that with all of the government biologists supposedly going around the South looking at endangered red-cockaded woodpeckers everywhere, and they even go into court now. Say there's 5,800 of these red-cockaded woodpeckers. And the idea that all these hunters and all these loggers and everybody else and farmers been in these woods, around the woods and everything, and nobody has seen one of these birds in 60 years.
Yeah, well,
now suddenly
the same stories.
One is like, that just defies logic.
They use the same stories, though, like the deer population. 1.6 million here in Pennsylvania, supposedly. 1.6 million in another state. 1.6 million. They always go with the same lies.
That's true.
And the Game Commission is bringing wildlife into this area at night in airplanes. I know that for...
Oh, yeah. There's wildlife relocators. I've known about those, too, so I know what you're saying.
Bear, mountain lion, and coyotes and everything here in Pennsylvania.
Okay, well, I thank you for your call, Alan. I hate to run short, but we're running out of time here. And, Jim, you got anything you want to say in wrapping things up here? I hate to rush, but we're getting short here.
No, thanks for having me on, and I'm glad I could talk with some of your listeners.
Absolutely. I wish we had more time because, well, I'll tell you, this is just this is a subject that's affecting everybody and everything going on. I mean, it's going to affect everybody's life in one way or another. If the regulations aren't going to affect you, these things wandering around as they relocate them will. And so it's something we need to stay abreast of. And, Jim, I want to thank you so much again for being on the broadcast and appreciate all the work that you're doing. Just keep up and don't be weary in well-doing. We're all fighting out here, and just networking together is the key. I agree with you.
All right, thanks.
Thank you. And, ladies and gentlemen, there he is, Jim Beers. And we've had Jim on our broadcast, and it's always a joy to talk to him. Don't forget Chris's website, AmericanExpose.com. That's American spelled with a K and not a C. I'm Sam, sitting in for Chris. Chris will be back Monday. See you later. God bless. Bye-bye now. I'm going to go to the hospital.